Hello, listeners. You are listening to another episode of That's Entertainment. I am your pop culture maven, Jeff Malone, coming to you from Brooklyn, New York. And usually I am joined by my Aunt Beth Woods, as this is a show predicated on discussions between me and my aunt. But she decided to take a break. Because, well, we'll get into that in a bit, but I am not here by myself. I have brought on a couple of guests live from Athens, Georgia, and from Cleveland, Ohio, respectively. It's Tim and Peter, the hosts of the Dead Times podcast. Tim and Peter, how are you guys doing today?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks for having me.
Yep, doing fine as well.
All right, all right. Now, very important. Aunt Beth and I usually start off with some small chat about the weather. So, are you guys, is Mother Nature smiling on you right now?
Surprisingly, it is pretty nice here. I was actually in shorts and flip-flops today, despite the fact that it is almost at the end of October in Cleveland.
Yeah, it's pretty mild down here too. We're actually like a couple days into an Indian summer. I think today got as high as like 77. Actually, it's crazy. Georgia is slowly becoming tropical. In the summer it rained here like every afternoon at 4 o'clock. It was like living in Florida. Right. Today was pretty nice. It's still really warm out even though it's dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been humid here in New York the past few days, more than I'd like it to be, because that means condensation on my glasses of water. But anyway, so on That's Entertainment, we pick a pop culture topic, a new one each episode, and discuss it according to the three Fs: first, favorite, and forever. So, you know, when we first encountered that subject, our most beloved thing about it, and what we're thinking about it right now. So there are a lot of pop culture topics that Aunt Beth and I love talking about, but there are a few occasions where she loves something a little more than I do, or I love something a little more than she does. And this is one of those instances. We're talking about in honor of Palm Springs being released on Hulu a few months ago, I thought it'd be a fun idea to discuss that and other time loop movies. But she watched it and was a little worried she wouldn't have enough to say for a full episode. So I'm like, well, you know what? But I had plenty to say, and she was like, well, I give you my blessing to do an episode on it without me. So I'm like, well, we'll see how it goes. I'll bring on Tim and Peter. I think they'll have some things to say about that topic. So that's where we are right now. So what do you guys think? You're the first guests on an Aunt Beth-less episode.
Well, I would just like to say first, Peter, I would like to preemptively withdraw permission for you to ever do an episode of Dead Times without me. If I'm not interested, then you will not be talking about it. I own you, and I do not want you acting out of turn. What was your question, Jeff? I'm sorry.
So you guys are the first guests on an Aunt Beth-less episode of That's Entertainment. So what do you think about that?
I feel like we've got some big shoes to fill. We are not directly related to you, at least as far as I know. So, but I'm hopeful that we will be able to do our best, and to fill out the necessary roles in this podcast to the best of our ability.
Well, you guys, I think like most people, I'm guessing you have aunts yourselves.
I do.
You may have discussed entertainment topics with at some point or another.
I believe I have.
Peter, does that description also fit you?
Yeah. Although My aunt tends to be a little bit less into pop culture than I am. So it's always
Mine as well. Mine as well, certainly, but.
interesting to try to or have a conversation with her about a movie that we saw.
Well, I do know on your podcast, I believe Tim, your mom has been on a few episodes.
Yeah,
So
she's been on too.
you do have a history of keeping it in the family.
Most definitely. I've actually this would be news to you, Peter, actually. I've been kicking around the idea of another podcast that I might do, and I was just talking to my younger sister about possibly being the first guest on that, just like a couple days ago. I think podcasting and family go well together.
Yeah, I mean, if you want lots of conflict and internecine drama, you have to go for the family.
Exactly. This is where all the knives come out.
Yeah. A good podcast is like Game of Thrones. There is a lot of fighting, someone dies, and then you are left with a giant mess at the end.
Man, we really are like crashing your nice podcast with our horror movie podcast vibes,
Oh, I do.
We ought to be on better behavior. This is a family show.
I wouldn't have invited you if I didn't know what I was getting myself into. So I do like mixing it up with new flavors as often as possible.
We got to be on good behavior though. We got to be on Paddington behavior, Peter.
Good old Paddington.
Well, I think you should always be on Paddington behavior, but that doesn't necessarily mean you have to be on Paddington, in on Paddington mode, I would say.
Yeah, I agree with this. This
Do you have your hard stare ready, Jeff?
I'll give it a practice one, and you guys tell me if it's effective.
Oh, that's good. That's pretty good. That's I don't know how well that'll translate to radio, but
I'll do an insert of some voiceover after we're done recording where I describe
describe it,
myself.
yeah, I think that would work.
Okay, so listeners, if you're wondering, I've known Tim and Peter through commenting on a comments section that started out as a review of a Community and TV show. It then just kind of evolved into an online hangout where we talked about whatever we felt like. So I've known you guys, I mean, people jumped in and on in at various points, but I've been commenting there for, I guess, about 8 years now. But how long have you
Wow.
guys been there?
Yeah, it would be the when Community had its decade since the premiere, that was a pretty shocking moment.
Yeah, yeesh.
But I have to have been Community. I know I've been commenting since season four. I think no, it was since season three. Season three was the one where we had that big push.
Yeah, I think it was right like the hiatus in the middle of season three when there was like the first big wave of fandom coming onto that board. And that I joined I think a few months later, around like right when season three ended.
I was a really latecomer, as I recall. That I didn't comment on any of the previous Community reviews. As a matter of fact, I think I found the CZ like I know it was at least 4 years ago because I remember commenting on there the night of the last presidential election. So I know that I've been there at least that long. But I actually did not watch a single episode of the show Community until this past year. I wasn't into the show before I found this thing. I frequented the AV Club because to comment on the Adventure Time reviews, because that was my favorite show on television at the time. And so I was like kind of a regular in those comment sections, and there was somebody who I would have exchanges with every once in a while in those comment sections, who was they changed their handle a lot, but I know at that time they were Occam's Blazer, and I just like clicked on their avatar at one point and saw that they had left a lot of comments on this review of the last episode of that show I keep hearing about, Community, that really don't seem related at all to the show. Mm-hmm. So I was like curious about that, and that was how I clicked on the page, and I started scrolling through the comments, you know, and there were already hundreds of comments that were totally unrelated to the episode. It had already evolved to that point. Because it had been that page had been around for like over a year at least. Probably two at least. I was just like, what is going on here? I think I commented. I was like, could somebody explain this to me, please? Is this a glitch? Is this what's going on? And I think narrator gave me like a quick like paragraph synopsis of what was up. And then I just started commenting. I actually don't comment as frequently as I really ought to. I keep meaning to log back into Discus so I can do that. I always thought it was kind of awesome that the CZ let me hang around despite me like kind of having nothing to do with it and just kind of blundering across it. It's one of the most like wholesome, like awesome corners of the internet that I've ever seen, and I feel very, very like lucky to be one of the pretty few people who are even aware it exists.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we're glad to have you, because I mean, one of the things that has come out of it is you guys host a podcast together, and there have been other interactions and friendships made. So it's been an enduring part of my life. Mm-hmm. And lots of people's lives. So there are decent corners on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to look hard enough, or not, and just wait until they accidentally fall into your lap.
Yeah. Well, we'll be discussing some stories, I think, that are about dealing with the drudgery of always going through the same shiz over and over, but then maybe every once in a while something nice comes along and helps you break free. Because we are discussing, as I mentioned at the top, time loop movies. Particularly the Groundhog Day style time loop. If you go on the website tvtropes.com, it'll have a page for two specific type of time loop stories. And we're talking about the Groundhog Day loop, where someone repeats the same day over and over again, or some other period of time over and over again, as opposed to the closed loop story, which is typical of 12 Monkeys, spoiler alert, I suppose, where someone like tries to change the past but realizes it was this way all along and their time traveling was what caused the thing in the beginning to happen in the first place. But anyway, so this topic was prompted by the release of the Andy Samberg, Krista Milioti rom-com, time loop rom-com called Palm Springs. And I'm like, this is just the latest time loop movie that was directly inspired by Groundhog Day. How is Hollywood coming out with so many of them? And we're going to get into it. We're going to talk about Palm Springs. We're going to talk about Groundhog Day and some other time loop movies that we enjoy.
Probably one in particular, since it's me and Peter who are on here.
Yes. Folks who...
no
folks
spoilers, who, but...
if we've got any Dead Times listeners coming over to this episode, I think they have a decent idea of what you're referring to.
I would imagine so. For those who don't, there is a particular time loop franchise at this point that that me and Peter have expressed a lot of fondness for on multiple occasions throughout. It's a very important franchise to the podcast overall. Yeah, I imagine we'll get in a few words in Edgewise about that.
Yes. Okay. So, I think we're ready to get into it, but before we get to our first section, I'm going to, as I usually do, start it off with a little bit of an intro to set the tone. So, here we go. Ba-ba, ba-ba, ba-ba. This is a podcast episode about time loop movies and TV shows. Ba-ba, ba-ba, ba-ba. This is a podcast episode about time loop movies and TV shows. Ba-ba, ba-ba, ba-ba. This is a podcast episode about time loop movies and TV shows. Ba-ba, ba-ba, ba-ba. This is a podcast episode about time loop movies and TV shows. All right, I'll stop it there.
I was gonna be like, is he waiting for us to stop him, or should we see how far this goes? I appreciate the dedication that you did that live instead of like going back and looping it a couple times after the recording.
That would have been an option, but I kind of wanted it, like, if there were any, if I stumbled over my words a bit, I wanted, like, those little differences to creep in.
Okay, yeah, that's a good point.
Okay, so, yeah. So first, we're going to jump into the first section, which, appropriately enough, is called First, where we go back to the beginning and talk about where we first encountered this topic. And I think for most people, if not everyone, well, maybe not everyone, but the majority of people in the English-speaking world, I would guess, the first time you ever encountered a time loop movie was Groundhog Day. Now, I don't think it was the first piece of fiction to ever tell this type of story, but it was the one that set the tone more than anything else for what came before it or what came after it. So, Tim and Peter, when did you first see Groundhog Day? Or was there a different time loop movie that you saw before it? And what were your thoughts?
I saw Groundhog Day when I was pretty young. That was, I think I saw it at like a sleepover with some some friends of mine. Like I went over to like my best friend's house with some of our friends, and we like had a blanket fort and watched Groundhog Day. I remember that we were young enough that the incredibly mild sex stuff in Groundhog Day was still like pretty risque for us. We were like, oh my gosh, should we be watching this? So yeah, long time ago, even for me. And I think that was probably the first time I like had seen that trope and like had been made to think about it. Maybe it was something I was familiar with before then, but I don't remember. And I saw that young enough that I don't think it makes much difference.
Yeah, Groundhog Day came out in 1993, so I probably saw it the following year on VHS that was rented from a Blockbuster video. Do you guys remember Blockbuster?
Is there one still open? Is that one in Oregon or is it Alaska that John Oliver's been giving press to? Are they still hanging on?
I do not know. But for the young people out there used to be like a business that you would go to in person and they would have tapes. And you would take the tapes for a couple of days and then watch the tapes and then you take them back. And then they'd fine you if you didn't rewind them.
Yes, the FBI would come pounding down on your door.
I'm sorry, you said this was called Block Buster, but they did not bust blocks. That was not the That was not the purpose of the business. They did this other thing.
I'm just trying to get a handle like on what you're talking about.
It sounds like a construction company, but it's definitely not a construction company. But yes, you know how in Star Trek they have those giant computers in the background? That's basically what we had to have in our house. And we would get these tapes from Blockbuster in order to play them. And we had to walk uphill both ways in the snow in order to do this.
So the kids want to know, I think, also, were there actual groundhogs working at the Blockbuster?
Probably not.
That would have been a really good urban legend to have. Like, I hope that somebody somewhere, like, sincerely believed that at one point.
Now, which one of us grew up the closest to Punxsutawney?
It was probably me.
Well, how far west in Pennsylvania is that? Because I grew up in Pennsylvania. I'm in New York, but I grew up outside of Philly.
I was born in Annapolis, which is also not, like, crazy far. But you have Virginia between. Well, no, you don't. So yeah, that might actually be pretty close.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't even say that I grew up there though. We moved down here when I was pretty young.
Well, yeah, I mean, we were all originally close enough that we could have made it a day trip to see if Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow or not.
Yeah, Punxsutawney is much closer to Pittsburgh than it is to Philadelphia.
I'm looking up Google Maps right now. It looks like it's about a 3-hour drive from Cleveland and like a 5-hour drive from Philly. So it looks like you would have been the closest.
Mm-hmm.
So going to Blockbuster, that was like driving to Punxsutawney for you?
Yeah, it was for you young kids these days with your internets and your Fortnites. You have no idea the hassle that involved going to the video store and getting the card that allowed you to rent videos from Blockbuster was like the most difficult thing you could ever possibly do, because they required like 3 different forms of IDs and like proof of residence, and it was bananas.
Was it harder than it is to vote in certain in swing states right now?
I'm going to say it actually was harder than it was to get registered to vote.
I would say, like, regardless of whether it was or was not more, the fact that that's the metric we're using surely gives you an idea of the scale of the undertaking we're talking about here.
Yeah, like you have no idea how difficult that Blockbuster card was to procure. Like particularly if you did not own your own home, it was a real difficult thing to get. Because I remember that they rejected one of my proofs of ID. And, like, I had to go home and try and find something else. Where you just logging onto Amazon and renting a movie is a completely different experience to the good old days of renting at Blockbuster.
Man, you're leaning hard into the boomer bit.
This
you're not dead yet, Peter. Come on.
This is more a Gen X bit than a boomer bit.
Okay, yeah, but...
I'm hearing that the Zoomers are coming after the Millennials, though. There was an article in New York Magazine about how on TikTok there's like a whole subgenre of Zoomers making fun of Millennials' Instagram bios.
Oh yeah, they're coming after me. I'm not worried. They're even poorer than I am. So
yeah, the thing about the Zoomers is that they actually are making fun of things that the Millennials really do, like reading way too much Harry Potter, whereas the boomers were making fun of things that the Millennials have not done and are not.
Right.
Because genuinely, whenever I see Zoomers making fun of Millennials, the jokes are spot on and hilarious. So I can roll with it.
Well, I think I mean, you did just give them fodder with your...
Mm-hmm.
Although, but anyway. So, my Groundhog Day story, I guess, is... And I was a little bit of a latecomer to watching it. I'm not sure why. I think I watched it in high school. And I want to say it was for class, either cinematic studies class or maybe an English class. And I had the same teacher my senior year for both of those classes, Mr. William Walter, where I might have just watched it randomly just at some point when I was in high school. And I know the second time I watched it, or I think it was the second time, was my senior year theology class. And we analyzed it according to how Phil Connors develops from a selfish to a selfless person. And it was like a long overdue viewing of a classic that I was aware of. And I just realized how much of a classic it was. And in the years since, I've only come more and more to think about it as one of the greatest movies of all time. So would you guys put it on that pedestal, or are you not quite as high as I am?
I think it is a brilliant movie. And I think it's a testament to the fact that it has spawned its own mini genre of movies that are trying to be Groundhog's Day, but also have to not be Groundhog's Day in some way. Like, there aren't that many movies that you can place a definitive start, even if repeating time loops, like, I'm sure Groundhog's Day is not the first one that did it, but that you can, but it basically is the start of this genre, and everything since then has been a comment on Groundhog's Day, either trying to live in its shadow or not, to extend the Puxatawny metaphor.
Exactly. Well, I was thinking it's comparable to the Blair Witch Project, which was not the first found footage movie, but it was the most influential, and you didn't have a huge wake of found footage copycats immediately after. It took about 10 years. With Groundhog Day, the influence took a little longer, more like 20 years, but it's those. They were both massively influential in the same way. But, I mean, with Groundhog Day, it's even more specific. Like, found footage, you can apply that. That's, like, in some ways more of a technique than a genre. But the time loop movie is a subgenre, or maybe even a sub-subgenre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's interesting is the fact that, as we see with Palm Springs, the general trend with time loop movies is to make them sci-fi movies. But Groundhog's Day isn't particularly a sci-fi movie. It's not a real, like, I guess if it had a genre, it would be magical realism. But
it's like the equivalent of like a philosophical novel. Like, it's just it's using like this impossible scenario just to kind of discuss ideas and play out a thought experiment. It almost like doesn't have anything to, like, the genre of the movie doesn't really have anything to do with the justification or lack thereof for the time loop, which is is pretty strange, and I think makes it unique. Among these kinds of movies.
Yeah, generally speaking, every time loop movie has to explain the time loop as a way to differentiate itself from Groundhog Day. The only real exception I can think of is one of our favorite movies, Happy Death Day, but then they go into extreme detail to explain it in the sequel.
Well, even in that case, they do reference Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
But I think we'll go ahead and officially jump into the next section of the show, which is the favorite section, because we're already getting into the discussion of other time loop movies.
I wanted to say really quick that I also think that Groundhog Day is pretty great. I was kind of like composing my thoughts a little bit, which I won't way into because we should keep going. But yeah, I think that Groundhog Day holds up extraordinarily well. I think it's a really beautiful movie. It's just kind of like perfect. Like, it's just everything is exactly where it should be in that movie. There's exactly as much of everything as there should be. I think it's actually a pretty extraordinary piece of cinema.
And Aunt Beth did, while she's not here, she did leave some notes that I wanted to make sure I mentioned throughout the show. And so her Groundhog Day origin, she knows she saw it when it first came out, but she says she truly doesn't remember it at all. So, which I don't know. That's, I guess she didn't see her shadow. I mean, she lives in Maine, so it gets darker quicker up there. So maybe that has something to do with it. But anyway, so. All right, the next section is the favorite section, where we discuss our favorite elements of the topic at hand. So we're going to have a suspicion that Groundhog Day is the favorite time loop movie for all of us. I'll let you guys confirm whether or not that's the case. So I asked you to come up with your favorite example besides Groundhog Day, but I also was a little concerned there because I'm like, there's a pretty good chance we might all have the same answer. So I listed some others that I like just in case we needed to mix it up, but I'll let you guys go ahead and get into it.
Yeah, I guess I guess in a way we kind of should hold off because I don't know how much there's left for me and Peter to say about Happy Death Day.
We've done three episodes on it.
Yeah, we covered the first movie twice. We covered it when it came out, which was very early in this show's run. I think that was like the third episode we did.
Fourth.
So that was the first like movie in theaters that we covered. And then in excitement for the sequel coming out a couple years later, we revisited it. We did another episode on the first movie, followed by our episode on the second movie when it did come out.
I believe I was on that one, the sequels episode.
Yes, indeed. I don't know.
We might have some listeners who maybe haven't seen Happy Death Day, so let's give them a quick synopsis.
No, this is your department, Peter.
Let's see. Happy Death Day.
You've done this twice now.
Story of a college student named Tree, which is short for Teresa, who is in a sorority and she is kind of in the tropes of horror movies. She is the bitch. And she gets murdered on her birthday, only to wake up and discover she's stuck in a time loop where the day always ends with her being murdered. And so she has to launch an investigation to figure out who her killer is.
Was that the killer?
Yeah, I think that was, or that might be Ghostface, actually. That might be different guy. And also the first thing to mention about Happy Death Day after the premise is that said main character Tree is the best main character in anything, in any piece of media.
Played by Jessica Roth,
who just kind of can do anything. That she's like at the outset of the movie, she's kind of awful, and she's good at being awful. She has so much to do. She goes on such a journey throughout the movie and changes in so many ways, but is also just like, there is this like this fundamental like not gonna let anybody push me around attitude that Tree has kind of from start to finish. And you just, and just seeing that as a constant, as sort of the one constant in the increasing chaos of the movie, is pretty awesome. And it's just, yeah, I think, just sticking to the first one for the time being, I think Happy Death Day 1 is really, really good. I think it's, much like its forefather. There's just a good balance of stuff in the movie. That it's kind of tongue in cheek. It's kind of like, has like a fundamentally comedic bent to it. And it's really good from that direction, but also just looking at it as a character study, as a speculative thought experiment, like all of these are. Like, it's really smart. It's really sweet fundamentally. I think it's a really wholesome movie. It's just a good experience. It's just a good movie to watch.
I would recommend it to dads or moms, parents, to show to their teenage daughters.
Sure, yeah.
I know I'm hoping to be a parent in the not too distant future. I don't know if you guys are, but I think if I end up having any daughters, I think that'll be on my to-do list among all the other pop culture I'd like to expose my kids to.
Well, my first priority upon having children will be to make any of them that there are watch Adventure Time a couple times through. But after that, yeah, I think Happy Death Day would be fairly high on the list. And you're right, yeah, it's a good movie about like what is sort of the fundamental, like, because the whole bit with Happy Death Day is that it's a slasher and that it follows all the beats of a slasher movie, but it's the same person getting killed each time. That it's the first one, because it's always like in slasher movies, it's always the bitch who dies first. But it's like the first act of a horror movie up to that point of a slasher movie. And then says, okay, but what if instead of moving on, what if we followed that typical first victim as they get stuck in an esoteric time trap, and have to karmically balance themselves as everybody in these movies does, until they can escape it and move forwards, which is pretty brilliant. That's like kind of like who she is, but it you come to find out that there's so much more than that. So it's a really smart way of, because what I was getting around to saying is that it's a good movie about being a teenage girl, or like, and at most like a very, very early 20s girl, I think is where Tree is supposed to be. And it's cool. It's cool to get a movie about that like feels pretty real. Like Tree feels real, in a way that the archetype that at the outset she most closely resembles often doesn't. Which I think is just another awesome dimension of that movie.
Peter, did you want to add anything to that, or did you have any other selection?
Well, I mean, I could talk about Happy Death Day all day, every day.
All happy because, death. Because...
yeah, because it is very much a genius
too easy.
Film, and I think in a way, it understands why Groundhog's Day works better than Groundhog's Day itself does.
I think that might be true, too, actually.
Or at least is more willing to articulate it, because they outright say that... Tree, at one point, outright says that when you relive the same day over and over and over again, you start to see who you really are. And that... who she really is not that great of a person, and realizing that fact, that when you can no longer run away from your circumstances, which is what entropy, the progression of time, is within the context of these movies, when you can no longer do that, you're stuck having to reflect on who you are as an individual, and you have to start making that change for the better.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a theme that keeps popping up in these types of movies. It's, I mean, it, it pretty much becomes unavoidable.
Yeah. But I would also like to say probably my favorite time loop movie is Edge of Tomorrow / Live, Die, Repeat.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've still not seen, actually. I've been meaning to see that since it came out, because everybody that I trust about movies said that it was great. So I really, really need to get around to it, but I have not yet, unfortunately.
I mean, the great thing about it is that it plays out in such a way that if you're a fan of Tom Cruise, you'll love it. If you're not a fan of Tom Cruise, it lets you indulge in him dying over and over again.
Yep. He's kind of the perfect actor to use for one of these movies because of that reason. Because I think I, like a lot of people, have very mixed feelings about Tom Cruise. Because Tom Cruise is a genuinely very good and very charismatic actor, and I almost always do enjoy him as a screen presence. But he's not really the greatest human being out of all the ones that there are. He's done a couple things in the real world that I don't approve of so much.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I feel like this movie really kind of hits that sweet spot where you're like, okay, I get to enjoy him because it's a movie and he's in this movie. But also, like, this like kind of exercises my darker feelings towards him at the same time.
Yeah, Emily Blunt just beats the crap out of him throughout that entire movie, and it's amazing.
Even better.
But yeah, that again, that's very similar to Happy Death Day or Groundhog's Day, which is that Tom Cruise starts the movie as this complete fraud who is sort of forced through circumstances not under his control into actually fighting an alien invasion, as opposed to just hanging back and being a propagandist, which is what his job is, and then is stuck in a time loop where he is forced to become the hero that he desperately does not want to be.
Ooh, could I very quickly follow that up with a very deep cut kind of reference? Which is, I think possibly the way that you're laying it out, I think that there's a book, there's a late 60s science fiction novel called Rogue Moon, by a brilliant writer named Algis Budrys, who's mostly out of print right now. But Rogue Moon strikes me as something that was probably an inspiration for Edge of Tomorrow, but Rogue Moon is not a time loop story. It's just a kind of recurrent resurrection story. The Rogue Moon is about, there's this weird thing that we found on the moon, like some kind of like weird ancient alien structure, that we're trying to explore, but the people who go in keep dying. So what the team ends up doing is they get somebody to send up there. They get like a really physically proficient, like badass dude to go in there knowing that he will die, but that they can reboot him from that point in his perception, but back on Earth, so he can tell them what was up, and then they can prepare for the next thing. And so it's about him getting a little further each time before he dies, and how kind of impossible it starts to feel after a while. But so it's not a time loop. Time is still marching on. But that thematically, that's a very similar kind of story to how a lot of time loop movies are. That it feels like the same sort of never ending, inescapable thing that the loop tends to strike the main characters as, done through this kind of speculative lens. So it's interesting. I think that's just one of those ideas that kind of mutated into the version of this trope that we have today. You know, that's like the sort of like proto version of it.
All right. So do you guys want to add anything about Edge of Tomorrow, or should I add my thoughts on my favorites?
Go for it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, do it.
So, Happy Death Day, I think, would be my favorite in this field besides Groundhog Day, and along with Happy Death Day to You. Kind of think of them now as like, I remember back when the American Film Institute, when they released their list of the 100 greatest movies of all time, and like Star Wars was on the list and Raiders of the Lost Ark. But and me and my dad and brother, we kind of thought that represents the entire series, the entire Star Wars series and the entire Indiana Jones series. So I kind of, you know, I think Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You have that same vibe to me. So if they ever, and if the first movie ever ends up on any greatest of all time lists of any variety, I'm going to interpret it that way. That's a representation of both movies. And so it's all prepared to have Edge of Tomorrow as a backup plan, but Peter, you already dove us into that. So I had even more backups because, you know what? I don't think I've ever seen a time loop movie or TV show that I didn't like at least a little bit. So in addition to the ones we've already mentioned, I would say that some other ones worth checking out are Source Code, which is with Jake Gyllenhaal on a train that keeps, does it keep crashing? And then he keeps redoing the same mission over and over again. And then there's Russian Doll, to take it to Netflix, where Natasha Lyonne is repeating a party over and over again on a night where she keeps dying, which is kind of the best star vehicle possible for her, her very New York style. And then there's even the very melancholy teenage version of Groundhog Day, which is Before I Fall, starring Zoe Deutsch, where she's kind of hanging out at a mean girl clique, and she dies, and then, as is the case with most of the rest of the movies we've discussed so far, learns to be a better person.
As one always has to do, that's so bound up with this trope. Even like Palm Springs, which also, to bring up another example real quick, I only just watched Palm Springs today in prep for the show, and I loved that movie. I thought that movie was pretty amazing, too. And even that one, which tries to, address it, it tries to be like, no, it's not about, like, karmically learning a lesson. It's about this other thing. Like, it's still, like, basically that. Like, it's still, like, kind of that, and we're just pretending it isn't. It's funny. It's just, it kind of lends itself to this. Could I bring up one more example before we change segments? As I've mentioned a couple times already, and have numerous times on me and Peter's show. My favorite TV show is Adventure Time, and one of my favorite episodes of Adventure Time is an episode called The Hall of Egress. And The Hall of Egress is, I think it very much falls within this trope, at least as much as it does with Palm Springs, because Palm Springs is interesting that the loop doesn't it doesn't reset until you fall asleep or die or like otherwise lose consciousness. And so, like, both of them at certain points, I think, like, just stay up all night that night and make it a little bit into the next day. So it doesn't loop automatically. It just loops back to that moment whenever they lose consciousness. In Hall of Egress, the main character, Finn, ends up in a kind of similar trap, that he's exploring a cave called the Hall of Egress, which he gets trapped in. And that it turns out to get out of it, there's like a wall, or it's a door, but it's a door he can't open, that there's no way to get it open. But he realizes that if he closes his eyes, he can just walk through it, that he can just walk through the door and get out of the cave. And he finds Jake and they talk to each other, but that he can't open his eyes because every time he opens his eyes, he finds himself back inside the cave. And that he plays out a bunch of different versions of this, that sometimes he just stays a night. And then tries to open his eyes the next day and then ends up back there. I think sometimes he makes it a couple months, but then we'll end up back there. And it's I won't go into how he gets out of it, because I think it's a really brilliant piece of storytelling, honestly. And it's another kind of weird take on the that this is why I brought it up, is that it's a weird take on that relationship that we all sort of perceive and assume between the time loop as like science fiction fantasy idea and the time loop as existential challenge for our main character to grow from. Hall of Egress's take on that is really interesting, that it's not really so much about Finn learning to be better, because Finn is already a pretty great person. It's kind of more about, like, it's using the loop mechanic to confront him with the familiar, and with how, like, set in stone his familiar environment is, and it requires him to reject that. That it's sort of, it's like the loop is there to show you what your normal life is, and that in order to, like, gain the larger perspective you need to get out of it, you need to leave that. That you need to walk away from this loop, which is arguably not that different from the loop you normally live in. Which is really interesting that doesn't really come out to the same message as Groundhog Day or Happy Death Day. That's not really what it's doing. But it's related. It's like the same skeleton, but a different theme, which I think is really cool. But that was the only other example that I wanted to talk about in detail, because I think that's a pretty great piece of media right there.
All right. So that's the Hall of Egress episode of Adventure Time. Okay, so shall we plow forward then?
Fine by me.
Okay. Usually before we get in the last section, Aunt Beth and I throw out some trivia questions to each other. So I prepared one for you guys. Did you guys happen to come up with any trivia?
Ooh, oh man.
I don't know if I have any on top of trivia.
Well,
I should have thought about it. I bet I could have thought of something. Hang on. Go ask yours so I can get an idea of the tone, and we'll see if I can come up with one.
Okay, so Groundhog Day, someone busting blocks in the background there? Anyway, so Groundhog Day was not nominated for any Oscars or any Golden Globes, but I did get some awards attention. It was nominated for 6 Saturn Awards, which are given out by the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films. What one category did it win?
Oh, goodness. I feel like it's going to be something wacky, so I don't know. Best costuming? Like, I don't know.
Peter, what's your...
I'm trying to, like, think outside the box. I might be wrong.
What's your guess, Peter?
I'll say best writing.
Okay, so you guys both guessed something that it was nominated for, but the actual prize it received went to Andy McDowell for Best Actress.
Huh. There you go.
It was also up for Best Writing, Best Costumes, Best Fantasy Film. Bill Murray was up for Best Actor, and Harold Ramis was up for Best Director. Andy beat out Ally Sheedy for Man's Best Friend, Bette Midler for Hocus Pocus, Michelle Forbes for California, Patricia Arquette for True Romance, Laura Dern for Jurassic Park, and Angelica Houston for Addams Family Values.
Wow. Those guys' tastes are all over the place. That is a weird list. As what happened to that award ceremony? That sounds way like more interesting than any of the ones that we have.
It's still going on. I don't think it's televised, but it still happens.
Man, why not? That sounds like way more worth watching than like the Grammys. Like, who cares? Who cares about that? That sounds interesting.
Let's see. And it lost Fantasy Film to The Nightmare Before Christmas.
huh. That's it's again, it's so weird. It's always weird to me thinking about movies that come out at the same time, especially with that example, because both of those examples, honestly, because those are both pretty timeless movies.
Yeah.
Like I just watched Nightmare Before Christmas the other day, and I was like, there's nothing about this where I'm like, oh yeah, early 90s. Like nothing. There's nothing like that. So it is weird.
I mean,
it's weird in
a town where it's like, I imagine the day-to-day life of Punxsutawney isn't all that different now than it was 27 years ago.
This is true. That is weird that they are both holiday-based fantasies.
Yeah.
That came out the same year. I don't know if anybody's ever put those two in a set together, but I suppose it works. There should have been a groundhog-shaped door in the tree circle. In Nightmare, but yeah, it's weird. It's weird, like, thinking about, like, other stuff that was going on in the world when that movie came out. That's like, oh, that was the same year Groundhog Day came out. Okay. and Jurassic Park, I guess. If those are all from the same year.
Yeah, all 93.
Yeah, and see, whereas, like, Jurassic Park, I think, is early 90s. It's great, and it holds up very, very well, but I can still look at it and be like, yeah, this movie was made in the 90s. So it's interesting.
All right. Did you come up with any trivia of your own in the course of answering that?
No, I got too sucked into the answer. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
My attention was divided.
Okay. Well, then I think we'll go ahead and jump into the final section, which is entitled Forever, where we take stock of where we are and where we're going. And unlike the protagonists of movies we've been talking about, I think we are going somewhere forward. Although, I mean, it depends on your view of the world. But anyway, no matter how you look at it, you can't deny that on July 10th of this year, Hulu gave to us Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti movie, Palm Springs. And it's another twist on the Groundhog Day formula. Andy Samberg is attending a wedding. He had something weird happen to him, and he keeps repeating the day over and over again. And Kristen Milioti has the same thing happen to her. And then they might be developing feelings with each other over the course of repeating the same day over and over again. So, guys, what does Palm Springs add to this subgenre that wasn't there before?
Ooh. That's an interesting question. Because, like I just said, I really enjoyed Palm Springs. But a lot of that, I think, was just the script and the two central performances.
Yeah.
That it should, the script is just on point. The dialogue is so good, so just reliably good, scene to scene. And then just both of the leads are amazing, and J.K. Simmons. J.K. Simmons is also pretty amazing, who's kind of the other like big character, who gets a lot to do.
But in terms of
what it contributes, I don't know.
It plays
with it in a couple of ways, but I don't know.
Before we get into it, I did want to refer back to Aunt Beth left me a note for this part of the discussion. She said, okay. How come Andy Samberg never figured out how to escape his fate all those years, but Kristen Milioti did it in the short time she was in Palm Springs? So another question to consider as we get into it.
Yeah, and I think that what that is that the version of the karmic test that Palm Springs has is that it's a question of whether you are the kind of person who, if this happened to them, you would kind of just embrace it and not want to go back. Because, like, that's the thing is Andy Samberg, like, outright states, is like, let's not, like, there's a way out. And he says, let's not take it. I don't want to take it. I want to stay here. And that's clearly just kind of the temperament of who he is, that he would rather have this completely empty, like meaningless, stale, boring existence where there are no consequences, where there's this cushion. where he can be certain of what's going to happen, that at least in that moment, he would really have rather chosen that. And what's her name? Sarah, is also, is enough of a disaster that you could, like, see her, like, also having that response if things had gone slightly differently, that she might be just as willing to give up as he is. And it's just kind of about how the two of them in various ways push each other in a direction where they do actually care, and where they don't actually just want to stay here. So yeah, that was like, I guess that's what the movie, I guess that's the interesting thing about it in terms of what it contributes to this trope, is that that the karmic punishment isn't part of the mechanics of the time loop, that the time loop is just some weird science fiction thing that happened. Mm-hmm. And that it's only a karmic test if they treat it that way, or if that happens to be what they need. It's a test for the kind of people who might just not want to leave. And that it's not designed as like a punishment. It's just that, well, if you don't want to leave bad enough that you like do everything you can to figure out how to leave, then you can just stay here. And it just is this kind of karmic thing as a matter of course. I think that that's really cool. I think the fact that there's an explanation built in for why self-improvement is the way to get out of this, and that it has nothing to do with the mechanism of the time loop. It and only has to do with the characters and who they are and why they have the relationship that they do with what's happening to them. So I think that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think fundamentally Andy Samberg's character in Palm Springs, he's comfortable. Whereas Sarah, Kristen Bellotti's character, she is forced to be uncomfortable every single day of the time loop.
Yes.
And that's what drives their different reactions to being in the time loop. And it's why Sarah can apparently study to be a PhD in quantum physics over the course of this time loop. And Andy Samberg is basically just doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I would describe it as the most postmodern time loop movie, because it...
Oh, definitely.
It very much depends on the audience's knowledge of Groundhog Day being a thing, without getting into the nitty-gritty of it. It's like, you know, it waves its hands, like, you know what the deal is. I mean, I think Andy Samberg as Niles, he says at some point, like, you know, we're in one of those time loop movies. That's, I believe, sort of how he phrases it.
Yeah. And of course, like, Happy Death Day does reference Groundhog Day, but, like, overall, Happy Death Day, like, plays with the tropes pretty sincerely. Whereas this movie is definitely, like, trying to comment on them also.
Right, and I mean, in that case, the reference is more of a quick joke, and it's also really playing at with the tropes of slasher movies in the time loop sandbox.
Right. Yeah. Whereas here that kind of like layer of irony is much more integral to the thematic fabric of the story, I would say.
Right.
I was going to say that there is one arguably more postmodern take on it, which is there's an episode of Space Dandy where they get stuck in a time loop. But the joke is they don't put it together for a couple weeks, that they just it's like a really boring town that they have to stay in. And so they don't realize that it loops until they've gone through it a whole lot, until it eventually dawns on them. Wait, we've been living the same day over and over again for like a month now. What's going on? which is pretty funny. It's a pretty good bit.
This looks like, is that called There's Always Tomorrow, Baby?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good episode. Space Dandy's a good show. There are a couple different anime takes on this actually that I was thinking about. It's a popular trope there.
Edge of Tomorrow was based on a Japanese book, so.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, although from what I understand, it's a very different to the movie itself.
It's called All You Need Is Kill, I believe.
Yeah.
Wow, that's the worst of the three possible titles. That's even worse than Live, Die, Repeat.
I think Live, Die, Repeat is effective as a tagline.
Yeah, but not as a title.
Right.
It's dread that property just can't catch a break in the title game. It was like it was born cursed. It started with a bad title and then it glimpsed like a pretty cool title. Edge of Tomorrow is kind of sick, but then it ultimately met what its fate was always destined to be, and it got titled something stupid, just like it was originally. It's kind of tragic. It's like a repetition. It's like it couldn't escape the repetition. It all makes sense.
Yeah, it also came out really close to like another Tom Cruise sci-fi movie, which I don't think helped things, because that movie was not good.
No. Are
you talking about Oblivion?
Yeah, that's the one where he plays, spoilers, a clone.
It's better than the one where he plays, spoilers, a werewolf.
Does he play a werewolf?
It's The Mummy. That's the twist at the end of The Mummy, is that he has like this gem, and now he's going to be the Wolfman.
Wow, I saw The Mummy and I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, there's going to be in the sequel, in the next big tentpole Universal Dark Universe franchise movie, this is going to have Tom Cruise as the Wolfman. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. I feel very glad that was teased to me. So it can be that much more satisfying when I actually get to see it.
Next, in air quotes, Dark Universe movie.
Yeah.
Oh, the Dark Universe. They tried. The Mummy was at least the third attempt Universal did at making a cinematic universe, and all of them failed.
But hey, we got The Invisible Man out of it, and The Invisible Man's a really good movie, so count your blessings.
That's quite possibly the best movie I saw in theaters this year.
I mean, there's not a whole lot been going on in theaters this year.
I mean, it's either that or Bloodshot, really. Or Bad Boys for Life.
Oof. Yeesh.
Yeah, no good on any of that. I'm trying to remember. I don't know if I saw much of anything else in theaters this year.
I mean, Hocus Pocus is in theaters this year.
Yeah. Did you guys see that Hocus Pocus was nearly number one at the box office like 2 weeks ago?
Wow. It's like when an old song gets back on the charts. You're like, wow, what happened?
Well, I mean, it did. What was it? I think it took like 25 years for All I Need Is Christmas Is You to reach number one.
Oh, screw that movie. That movie was so dumb.
Well, the song, the Mariah Carey song.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the movie.
But that was, I mean, that didn't take a pandemic for that to have to happen.
It's true.
Good old Mariah Carey. Mariah Carey was in a Lonely Island movie, and she stole that movie.
Are you talking about Popstar?
Yes.
Okay.
The joke where she said that she really relates the song about being humble because she's probably the most humble person that she knows made me laugh harder than I think any joke has in a movie theater.
That's like a line from Happy Death Day. That's like I'm blanking on her name. Why am I doing this? This is blasphemy. Not Tree, the only character who might be better. Peter, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And
This is dreadful. This is our listeners have heard us sing the praises of this character several times, and we're both failing to remember. All right. I need to rectify this.
I was about to say Rachel, but that's the actress's name.
Danielle.
Yes. That's like played a Danielle line.
Played by Rachel Matthews,
who is also incredible.
Yeah. I mean, Happy Death Day has spot on casting.
Did you guys know that Rachel Matthews tested positive for COVID-19 back in March?
Oh, geez. Well, she'd be over it by now then.
I'd hope so.
I hope she's doing all right.
Mm-hmm. But speaking of Popstar, where do you guys fall on Popstar versus Hot Rod?
I have not seen Hot Rod.
Oh, I would very much recommend that to anyone who's ever liked Andy Samberg in anything.
But I definitely really enjoyed Popstar. It was one of the funnier movies that I've seen over the course of the last 5 or so years.
Wow, I should watch that, I guess. I never saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds excellent.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a meta-commentary on the Lonely Island itself.
That sounds very up my street. That looks really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so winding it back around to the Andy Samberg movie that brought us to this moment. So where do we stand with time loop movies? Why do they have such an enduring appeal? Because, you know, I hear here's this other movie that's got Groundhog Day influences, and they keep feeling fresh. And I think you guys would agree with me about that. So what is it about them that makes them keep feeling fresh?
Well, one of the things is that it seems they try really hard to ground the Groundhog's Day
very nice.
And in a different genre.
He deliberated and he still went for it.
Yeah. I could not think of a better way to phrase it.
No, I don't think there is. I think you're just screwed.
I'll add a rim shot or something in to really underline it.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
There's going to be wacky music underneath all of this, right? I figured this was like a real podcast I was signing up for once.
I do some post-production work, so.
Yeah, I'm expecting Yakety Sax to play every single time I speak.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and I want air horns underneath every third word that I say.
Yakety. Okay. Very nice.
But yeah, one of the things that is Groundhog Day is sort of the platonic version of this movie, I guess would be the best way to put it. It is not the Shadows in the Cave version of the movie, but the real thing. Whereas all these other movies that are in its wake tend to go to a specific genre and do a Groundhog Day version of that genre. So Happy Death Day is slasher movies, and Edge of Tomorrow is sci-fi movies.
Palm Springs is rom-com.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the ways that the sub-genre of time loop movies manages to keep itself feeling fresh, because you're not rewatching Groundhog's Day when you could just rewatch Groundhog Day. You're watching Groundhog Day taking place inside another genre with its own expectations.
Oh yeah, it really isn't a genre into itself. It's just an idea, and that it but it doesn't dictate tonally what the story is going to be. You know, you can have, you can do versions of it that are, there's that cartoon Looped, which is just the whole thing is that like every episode is the same day, and it's just these like two kids who know it, and they just like pull pranks or whatever. Like you can do that, which is like just super lighthearted and fun, or you can not even leave children's cartoons. You can do something like Hall of Egress, which is kind of bleak and existentially troubling, and that there's this whole like you could do anything with it. It's just a concept, and I think it will probably always have fresh takes on it, in the same way that we continue to have fresh takes on being chased by monsters. Like we've been telling stories about people being chased by monsters since antiquity, and we keep telling them because we keep having new genres and new mediums to just try that idea out in and see how it interacts with the medium or the genre. So I think it will probably have a kind of perennial appeal comparable to that now that it's in the lexicon. I think people will probably always come back to stories about this in the same way that we always come back to people getting eaten by things in the woods.
Yeah, I mean it's a young enough storytelling trope that we're lucky in a way to be very familiar with the not quite originator, but the one that pretty much defined the trope as we know it. And I think it's maybe a really close similar example is It's a Wonderful Life. You know, there's been plenty of in It's a Wonderful Life homages and style stories where people wish they'd never been born and then get to see that world. And we recognize that, oh, it's a Wonderful Life style story. And, you know, I think from just a storytelling perspective, there's always an appeal to getting a chance for a do-over. And time loop movies are about infinite do-overs. And we've been hitting on it over and over. You know, it's a chance or a multitude of chances to become a better person. And I think that is a feeling that most people, if not everyone, can relate to.
Yeah. Well, and especially right now, I was going to say, like, the obvious answer to why, at least right now, there are time loop movies coming out is that actually 2020 is kind of the most on point year to make for a movie about a time loop to come out, a movie about like how you get up every day and it's the same thing. I think it just like it speaks to certain aspects of the human experience that are like pretty universal, that everybody feels trapped at different points. Everybody feels like they're in a situation that they can't escape, and not a situation where they're in danger, but where they're just kind of stuck, where they're just like locked into place. And it usually does take like growth as a person to get out of that. It usually does involve changing yourself more than it does your circumstances changing. And I think that that's just something that tends to prove true. And so it feels true. And it resonates with people. And that's why these movies have the appeal that they do and why we keep making them.
Do you think we'll have an unusual number of converts to Buddhism by the end of this year?
I mean, anything's possible. It's just as likely as anything else. That is, I've heard a lot of discussion about Groundhog Day in that context, as I'm sure you two have as well. And I didn't really feel qualified to speak on it, which is why I didn't bring it up. But there have definitely been people who look at it as being more or less about the Buddhist conception of enlightenment. And then if you think about it, like that's like a version of this concept that has been around for like that's the second oldest contiguous religion, I think, that we know of after Hinduism. I think people have always been interested in the idea of framing their existence in the way that this concept does.
So, any final thoughts on time loops before we wrap it all up?
I was gonna try and make some kind of like clever joke that I had looped around because jokes, but I couldn't think of how to make it. So my final thoughts are this: the sound of my last two brain cells trying to explain why I didn't answer immediately. time loop movies are cool, and I think we're gonna keep making them and enjoying them. Those are my last thoughts, apparently.
I think that there is an indelible concept to this that'll always be relevant. There will always be people who are in need of something to spur them to growth, and so there will always be time loop movies and TV shows that force that growth upon them.
Nice. Very nice. Okay, so... to wrap it all up, Tim and Peter, do you guys have anything you'd like to promote or recommend?
Yes, Tim and I.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we have our own podcast, Dead Times, which you can find at deadtimes.blog. We have 90 episodes, maybe 91.
Yeah, I forget how the fence posting works. And we're still undecided as to what our special 100th episode is going to be. But it'll be epic.
But yeah, we talk about horror movies, and we did an entire series on A Nightmare on Elm Street, which we have got up to Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which is also very metatextual, like Palm Springs.
And I've been on a few episodes as well.
Yes, you were on Train to Busan, I know.
Yes, and Happy Death Day to you, and Insidious, The Last Key, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. All good times.
All very good times. Train to Busan is still one of my favorite episodes, because I really loved that movie, and I felt like I was excited to get to talk about it.
Would you say being on a train with zombies is just like being stuck in a time loop?
They are experiences that I imagine while they're happening, it really seems like it'll never be over. So I suppose in that way, yes.
But I'd say looking back, one would look very different from the other.
Oh, I was going to say, very briefly, this will be my final thoughts, I guess, is that I think that it is kind of amusing that the three of us, who all know each other because of the CZ, because of this community that we were part of online, the glue of which is that we keep coming back to this day when this review was posted over and over again for years. and that we're all just kind of in this thing together, and we can talk to each other and understand each other and figure it out. I think it's fitting that the three of us have ended up talking here for a couple hours about time loop movies.
And we'll do it again tomorrow, I guess.
We'll talk about something. That's kind of the CZ promise. Is, you know, you might not do the same thing, but you'll keep talking. That you'll keep talking about stuff. You'll keep talking about pop culture and about what's going on, and you know that you come back and do it.
There's always more pop culture to talk about, even in a pandemic where no one is making anything.
Yep, YouTube has been fire though. I should start a podcast about that. I could get an early jump on it.
Do a podcast reviewing YouTube videos.
Yeah, why not? Like it's the only media environment that is like consistently like popping this year. So like, you know, podcasts like talk about pop culture, and that is the pop culture that we have right now. Why not?
Well, if you want to do a podcast about Quibi, you'll have to do it quick because it shuts down officially. I think December 1st is going to be the last day it's active.
That's true. And we've been through so much together. It really hurts to come to the end of the journey like this. It's been so long.
How I do not understand how it's possible to launch an entertainment company in the middle of a pandemic where no one has anything to do except watch streaming video and fail as hard as Quibi did. We'll still always have that. We'll always have that commercial starring Sansa Stark promoting Quibi.
We will always have that because of the internet.
Well, no more quick bites. We'll just have to go back to our full meals. And I think
was it an abbreviation for that?
Yes.
I didn't know that. Wow, it's about to die, and I only just now learned its real name. That feels kind of tragic.
Jeffrey Katzenberg had an idea. You're in line at the coffee shop. While you're waiting, you want a quick bite of TV, so you whip out your phone and take it in while you're waiting for your latte.
It's such a terrible idea. See, like, the problem is that America does not have a public transportation culture like Japan does, because I feel like that idea would be great in Japan.
Oh, yeah. No, it'd be perfect. Also, like, to play devil's advocate, it is an incredibly stupid idea, but the things that, like, take off in the internet age are often things that, like, if you pitched them, they would sound like terrible ideas. Like, if I like coming up with, like, TikTok, like, if I was like, here's what we're gonna do, we're gonna make this thing, it's TikTok, like, you wouldn't be able to look at it and be like, oh yeah, like, literally everybody on the face of the planet will use that'll be like gigantic. Like, you wouldn't like think that. So I appreciate the the boldness and the tenacity of trying to jump ahead of the curve in that kind of market, to be like, all right, here's just something just completely like completely counterintuitive. Like, you would never think in a million years that it would be something useful to a lot of people. And they just went for it anyway, and it didn't work out, but they maybe demonstrated an understanding more so than almost anybody else of just how open the possibilities are today, in this crazy, insane, terrible, wonderful modern world. So I appreciate it for that. I can appreciate it on that level.
Okay. Well, I will not be promoting Quibi, but I would like to mention Aunt Beth and I are working on a one-year anniversary episode.
Woo!
We started about a year ago, and we're asking our fans and listeners to send us messages that we're going to read or play on the show. If you want to record it, you can send us an audio file. And what we're requesting is something that is in the format of That's Entertainment. So, like, the first thing you thought when you heard about the show, your favorite thing about it, and any wishes you have for us for the future. Or if you don't want to get that involved, you can just say, hey guys, how's it cooking? Just whatever random message you want to come up with. So Tim and Peter, if you want to contribute, we'd be happy to throw you in the mix.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to mention, bring up again, Ken Jeong, if you are listening, we would love to have you on for a discussion of The Masked Singer. It's I tweeted if this tweet gets 1,000 retweets, will Ken Jeong be a guest on That's Entertainment? So it's a bit of a campaign that's going on, you know, a little pie in the sky ambition.
Oh man, we got to see though. We gotta play this thing all the way to the end, see how it goes.
Yeah,
could be something.
So if anyone's out there and you want to retweet that, or if you happen to know Ken Jeong or know someone who knows someone, you know, that's what's going on there. And as always, if you leave us a review, we will read it on air. Palm Springs is available to view on Hulu. Groundhog Day is currently up on IMDb TV, which is free to watch with ads. And yeah, so I guess I think I'm ready to say so long. Are you guys ready to say bye-bye as well?
I mean, it's always it always hurts a little, but yeah, if the time has come now, I'll say so long.
Yeah, I'll say farewell.
I'll be the same goodbye.
And I will not add my contribution to the Sound of Music, as I will instead say, as I normally do, keep your remotes handy and your eyes. Oh, wait a minute. Don't forget to follow us on social media. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And
what? Nothing.
Okay. Well, go ahead. Or well, this will be the interrupting ourselves section. Anyway.
Are we an interrupting cow?
Do you fancy yourself
a cow? Moo. Moo.
You walked right into that.
Thank you very much.
You set him up by knocking him down, eh, Peter?
Yep.
Anyway, as I was saying, keep your remotes handy and your eyes open.
Thank you so much for having us on. This was awesome.
It was fun.